Hello, I'm Heather Rutledge, Executive Director of ArtReach St. Croix. Each month, we partner with Voices in the Valley to bring you the art news with help of stcroixsplash.org, the St. Croix Valley's online event calendar. November reminds me that I believe in abundance and in generosity. I see evidence of these important qualities in the artists, arts organizations, and audiences in the St. Croix Valley. I like to stuff November's art news with gratitude and with thank yous. There are so many people who make the art world go round, but I'm going to focus on the people behind the success of stcroixsplash.org, which provides the source of info and inspiration for each installment of the art news. Events on Splash are uploaded by artists, project managers, volunteers, and event hosts from all over the area. These are the people who make cool things happen, and they want you to know about it. The content is 100% authentic, culturally driven, and community focused. After pictures and details are uploaded, Cindy and Alana and others at ArtReach ensure that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. Each week we approve events and keep our fingers on the pulse of the Valley's art sector. St. Croix Splash is a major way that we share our enthusiasm for what's happening in this special place. Not many communities of our size afford the kind of calendaring resource that we have with Splash. It goes to show that we can do more together by working on a regional level. Early and ongoing funders of St. Croix Splash have been critical to its success, including the Hugh J. Anderson Foundation, the St. Croix Valley Foundation, Water Street Inn, and DiscoverStillwater.com. Together, we have built and sustained the region's go-to event calendar. Other amazing partners include Steph Atkins, who produces this segment on Voices in the Valley, Christy and Jen at DiscoverStillwater.com, who encourage tons of activity. As always, you can find out about live music, theater, visual arts events on stcroixsplash.org. But you can also discover classes, culinary arts, guided ranger hikes, and more on the St. Croix Valley's online event calendar. This has been Heather Rutledge bringing you the art news. Tune in to Voices in the Valley Saturday mornings at 10 on KLBB 1220 AM.
Well, hold your papers up high and forget all your worries. Well, troubled poets can't die. They're the meat of the story.
Good morning and welcome to Voices in the Valley, where we celebrate the creative spirit and nurture the art of storytelling. Well, it is in theory morning, but actually, Tina and I are at Craves, and we just had appetizers.
And such.
So we're letting the cat out of the bag that this is pre-recorded. And so get your morning coffee.
Happy hour.
And have your happy morning hour.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're so glad that you're joining us here today for a special episode of Voices in the Valley, because Dina, in case you have not received an email, it's November and it's Give to the Max through Give Minnesota.
I love it.
Yeah, yes. So Give to the Max is an organization that tries to create a better life for us here in Minnesota by inspiring, encouraging, and motivating people to give money to their favorite charitable organizations in order to make a difference in the lives of others. And so we're having a special Give to the Max episode.
Whoop, whoop.
Woohoo! To make sure you all out there know about the awesome work that the Shire is doing to empower students to give voice to their stories and to build narratives to build a better life. And so today we will have a blast from the past, actually. We're going to be playing programming that we've done before. Student Emma is going to be coming on to share a personal narrative that she wrote about her father dying of cancer and her last goodbye to him. Very powerful, very meaningful. And then we have Mr. Wes on. They are a student band creating original music and quite popular with the young set. Finally, we'll end with Rebecca and Jill talking about conflict in Harry Potter, and that was a part of our How to Write a Novel series.
So, I love it.
Yeah, so there's lots of great things happening here at the Shire. We have a sci-fi podcast called Hush, We've got a literary magazine called The Boom Site, and all kinds of ways for students to tell their stories in the medium of their choice and what makes a difference. So, I mean, Dina, long ago we were playing make-believe.
Absolutely.
And we were, you know, playing paper dolls and Barbies and self.
Yes.
Like we used to talk about.
Yes, self.
For us, well, never really went anywhere.
No, but it was very imaginative.
Absolutely. And these students are using their imagination to create more empathy in the world and to make a difference. With that said, I really would love to encourage the listeners to go online to theshireonline.com and click on the Give to the Max button and consider even $10 makes a huge difference. It would allow us to continue putting on this radio show. It allows students to create their podcasts. It creates opportunities for students to share their poetry, their novels, their poems. And what these students have to share is really important and meaningful, not only to them, but to us.
And a place to share it is just as meaningful.
Well, yes, and a safe space to share, because not every creative student necessarily feels welcomed in the school environment. And this is a place where they can hang with other people and know
like-minded.
That they're loved and cared for, and that their creativity, originality, and unique nature
is appreciated.
And held up as being something of value, not
Absolutely.
As something to be made fun
yep.
of. It's really important. So with that said, I'm going to shift gears here, and we're going to go to the interview where Emma's friends, Natalie and Christina, ask Emma about the narrative essay she wrote and then won a competition for about her father dying of cancer. So here are Christina, Natalie, and Emma. But now I'm delighted to introduce our student hosts for today's show, Christina, a 9th grade Lakeville North South High School student, and Natalie, a 12th grade PSEO student at the University of Northwestern. Welcome, Natalie and Christina, to the show.
Hi.
It's really good to have you here. And you have a special, special guest today because you have one of your best friends, Emma, on the air. Is that right?
Yeah, we love Emma.
Emma, hello. Welcome to Voices in the Valley.
Hi.
It's good to have you here. Girls, why don't I turn it over because you have some questions for Emma, and go ahead.
Okay, well, first of all, Emma, are you comfortable with sharing about your dad?
Yeah, it took me 2 years, but I think I'm there.
Okay, so can you tell us about this writing competition that you took part of?
Last fall, I was my modern teacher from Threads Dance Company, talked about a writing competition. You could get free tickets to their Warriors of Light Threads Dance Company show if you won this writing contest. So the prompt was, write about something that made you stronger. And so immediately my thoughts jumped to my dad and that situation. So I wrote about kind of my last moments with him and how it affects me today and how it kind of puts a filter on my life. And I ended up winning, which was super cool. And got to read it to an audience, and it was just, it kind of put me on a new path.
Was it risky?
Yes, because it's hard for me to share something so personal. It felt really therapeutic, actually, to share it, but at the time I was really insecure. What if I came off like I was self-pitying myself or overdramatic or just kind of full of myself, egotistical, just all these things. I was really insecure about it. So, yeah, it was a bit of a risk.
How did you muster up the courage to submit your essay?
I submitted it 1 minute before the deadline of September 31st? Yeah, September 31st at 11:58. I was like, I had already written it. I usually take things to my mom to edit, but I was like, no, I'm not even going to tell her. I'm just going to submit it. So I submitted it, and they emailed me saying, congratulations, come to our show. You have 2 free tickets.
Say, Emma, before you read it, for our listening audience out there who may not know what happened, could you just briefly tell us what happened with your dad?
When I was 10 years old, he was diagnosed with a rare form of cancer called, myxoid round cell liposarcoma cancer. I've said it so many times, I can't believe I just forgot that. But 4 years later, he ended up passing away, and that kind of dominated the beginning of my teenage life. So,
Oh, well, I'm looking forward to hearing your essay. Thank you for sharing it with us.
I felt dread. One wouldn't expect such a thing while staying in a building the size of a mansion. It was true that a small living area held a fancy couch, and across from that a high-definition, flat-screen TV. It was true that this led to finely carpeted hallways that connected four thickly wooded doors to equally lovely rooms. It was also true that yellow flowers posed on the windowsill and the walls were colored a calming pastoral green. However, the couch, though sumptuous, sat forlornly with only the barest potential for comfort. The TV, though large, only played trashy soap operas. The doors, though thick, said nothing of the paper-thin walls that conceded to the sounds of raspy coughs from dying patients across the hall. The fragrant flowers, though pretty, did nothing to mask the odor of death, medicine, and old people. Plus, the walls looked like a rotten garden regurgitated its breakfast. But the absolute worst part of this place was the truth. Behind one of those four thick doors was my dad, and he was dying. The deathbed held him, a plastic white contraption that took on the responsibility of moving him up and down, since he, paralyzed by the cancer that broke apart his spine, no longer could. The blinds, closed and dreary, leaked dimness into the room. I held my father's clammy hand and commanded myself to breathe. He's paralyzed from the waist down, my mother had told me 3 weeks ago. I tightened my grip on his fingers. He's in a comatose state, she whispered 3 days ago. I sucked in a shaky breath. He's entered the active stage of dying, she said yesterday. I choked on my watery saliva and salty tears while staring at my father's once lively face. I stroked his slimy, gaunt, ailing brow while noting his cheekbones sticking sharply out. I listened to his breathing, now so irregular I had no doubt it would stop. Breathe in. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Gasp for breath. Breathe out. 1, 2. His new respiratory pattern. I smoothed his black hair off his sticky forehead and giggled at his ridiculous bedhead. I chortled again, and then I began to cry. My father's body was small, shrunken from his original 6-foot height to the size of a frail boy. He made noises from the very back of his throat, and his mouth widened, showing off his crooked British teeth. I burst into speech. I'm not sure what I said or even how I said it. I am sure that my entire body was shaking and tears traced down my chin and onto the thin cream blanket covering his blue pajama-clad legs. His hand still in mine hung limply, like a rabbit hanging from a noose. Golden hues of his wedding band, kept on his skeletal finger by tape, glittered even in the darkness of the day, a final tribute to my parents' marriage. I stood from my chair, placed the last kiss I could give him on his forehead, and turned towards the door. Goodbye, Daddy. As I left the room, I pushed back the desire to collapse by his bed and never leave. Instead, I gave a watery smile and allowed a sense of numbness to consume me. Chin up, I thought. I continued to be haunted by my father's passing. I think I always will be. He died March 11, 2014. I was 10 when he was first diagnosed. Walking away from him, knowing it was the last time I would see him alive, I learned a valuable lesson. No matter how crappy life becomes, you keep your head up and put your best foot forward. As my brother was on the brink of tears, I magically found the right words of comfort. On late nights when my mother didn't make it up to bed, I helped her up the stairs and under covers. When my friend cried to me about how unfair her dad was, I listened. That night, I vowed to myself, no matter what happens in my life, I will always put my best efforts into everything I do. Life's short. I don't want to waste a second.
Wow. Emma, thank you so much for sharing that with us.
I can't hardly listen. It makes me sad every time.
I know.
It does. I get choked up just thinking about it. I literally do.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Beautiful.
We're going to move on to something a little more light. Definitely spontaneous, which is three young gentlemen in high school who have a band called Mr. West.
Love it.
And they're going to tell us about how they got started. And one thing that we love about Mr. West is their song Wicked ended up underscoring the party scene in episode 8 of Hush.
Awesome.
So that's pretty fun.
Very
and
cool.
Their music is pretty amazing. They're
awesome.
Very talented. Let's hear from the boys.
Listen in.
And Mr. West.
My name is Steph, and I'm here with a rambunctious but talented band named Mr. West, who we will get to as soon as I introduce my music vocals, Jeff. Jeff, welcome.
Guys, thank you so much. My name is Jeff Brandt, and I'm here because I love music. I used to play in a band, and I'm really kind of excited to hear about what it's like to be in high school and be in a band in 2017. So,
sure.
All right, guys, the name. Give me the story. How did that happen?
So a quick lead in, like we actually went through a lot of names, but one day we're like, hey, we should be called Pilot. And we're all like, yeah, that's a really good name. We're like, hey, we should cover that one song, Magic. Who's it by again? We looked it up and it was by Pilot, so that didn't happen. On to Caleb.
Well, Mr. Wes, my grandpa passed away right when we really formed the band, and his name was Wes, so I just kind of named it after him.
That's really cool.
That's cool.
Okay, Jeff, that is so much better than your name. I can't even begin to say.
No, like I know, like, how long have you guys been a band for?
A long time. We've been a band. Yeah, no, it's been like 6 years.
6 years.
So Gunnar and I were in bands before, and then Will was like a kid we went to school with.
I used to play the bass on the electric guitar. Just
we were
not really experienced.
He was the keyboard player originally, and then we're like, wait, light bulb, we need a bass player. Why don't you just play bass instead of playing keyboard? Somebody plays bass.
That's a team player right there.
He's got the team on
his
back.
I also play saxophone, just putting that out there. Book me for parties, man.
So one thing I'm going to say is, like, you're pretty good on the bass. So obviously it wasn't just like, what was that like for you to get that sort of mandate? And, like, how did you get into it?
Like, I kind of just, like, well, hanging out with them all the time, they're always playing guitar. I'm like, yo, I want to play guitar. So I asked for a guitar for my birthday, got an electric, never really touched it. And then I sold it, got an acoustic. And I just taught myself how to play acoustic. And then after I got my bass, like, 2 years ago, I would just lock myself in my rooms at time. And then, because I, like, had two different rooms, I had to go in between stuff happened to my family. But I had to, like, I just locked myself in my room and just played along to the radio. It just played for hours on end.
That's how you do it, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's how you get really good.
For 2 years.
So I know that, like, when you record something, so much of it is, like, is it an honest reflection or is it, like, who we are? So how do you, when you guys think about the last stuff you've recorded, do you feel like it's a pretty true representation of who you guys are as a band right now?
Yes and no. Like, there's different vibes. There's different parts of every song that I personally feel attached to and I feel like represents us. But I know Gunnar likes Wicked Witch the best. I like Emigrant the best just because I kind of, like, went hard into writing that song. So I know different songs attach me differently. And Gunnar might say, you know, we're more like punk or whatever. And I might say we're more fusion jazz, but we're not, you know.
And I'm going to jump in with a question for Gunnar, because Wicked Witch actually is the song that we selected to underscore a scene in our sci-fi podcast series written by high school students and middle school students here in the St. Croix Valley called Hush. And it's in scene 3, and I liked it very much for what we were doing because of the beat behind it and also for the sentiment that it was portraying. So could you tell me, Gunnar, why is it your favorite of the songs? Because I honestly liked all three of your songs. It just happened to fit that scene a little bit better.
Well, personally, I think it's, like, no offense to you guys, but I think it's the least corny. I don't think, like, I don't think we have, like, very corny music, but, like, I think it's the least corny, and I think there's some technical stuff in there that, I don't know, if you're not a musician, you might not understand, but, like, not saying that it's, like, super technical, but, like, I don't know, that's stuff I like.
Well, and here's the fun thing about that song is that in episode 8 of Hush, in scene 3, it will begin the scene and will play the very end of the song. And then an announcer will come on, which will be Jeff, actually,
saying whatever. I based it off the current, so whatever, you know, they say on that, saying you've just listened to Mr. West playing The Wicked Witch, and then they'll turn it down because they're going to start their phone call. So you'll technically be on the radio in episode 8 of Hush. Yeah. So, yeah, yeah, cowabunga, man. Yeah, there you go. Okay, I love them. They make me laugh so hard, those guys. So I, yeah, it's
fun.
All right, so you ready for the last guest?
I am.
So one of the things that we always try to provide people here at the Shire and through Voices in the Valley is tips and resources on how to write their story and how to create the themes and characters that they want to. And so as a part of our How to Write a Novel series, we had two students from Matamida High School come on to dissect and to talk about and analyze internal and external conflict in Harry Potter. And I'm telling you, these ladies sound like they should be on NPR. So listen on
in.
Look
forward to it.
Yeah.
If you've just joined us during the show, student writers and professional authors share tips, offer inspiration, and read selections from their work. Today we have back on the show student hosts Rebecca and Jill from Matamidai High School. Welcome back.
Hi.
Thanks for having us again.
Well, it's fantastic to have you here, and I understand you are going to talk about conflict in Harry Potter.
Yes, lots of people are familiar with Harry Potter, and we are here today to discuss how internal and external conflict develop throughout the series.
But just a warning, this is not spoiler-free. There's a lot of spoilers that will be occurring.
This is a huge spoiler alert, so if you haven't read it yet, probably you should turn this off.
But really don't turn it off, because we really want you to stay. And, you know, if you haven't read the stories yet, well, good, this is incentive. Go out and do it now. But... You know, our guest earlier on, Andy Hewler, told us that the most important rule of conflict is to have it. And certainly J.K. Rowling does that in spades. So I'm going to turn it over to you to have fun with this discussion. And I can't wait to hear what you have to say.
Great. Thanks, Stephanie.
Thank you.
All right. So we're going to take you back to English class for a minute here and talk about the definition of internal and external conflict. Internal conflict really refers to conflict that occurs within a character. A character's problems with themselves, usually, and it's usually portrayed just in their mind.
And then the other main type of conflict is external conflict, which is when the character is facing problems that are outside of themselves, whether it be with nature or an antagonist, such as the infamous Voldemort. Or he who shall not be named.
And J.K. Rowling uses this in every single book, starting from the very beginning. Although in the very beginning, it's usually internal conflict, because real external conflict, Voldemort, has not yet manifested itself. And that happens around the fourth book. But in the first couple novels, it's really more about Harry's problems with himself and trying to fit in, trying to get used to a world that he hasn't belonged to for most of his life.
Or even know that it existed, because he lived with the Muggles.
We know that it exists, but...
As you were saying, progresses into more of an external issue. But inside, it's kind of funny, because we were talking about this earlier, how internally he's fearing Voldemort. But Voldemort isn't even really a physical thing until the end of the fourth book, which is when it progresses into the external conflict that we see later in the series.
And later in the fifth book, he's fearing Voldemort again, but he's more afraid of Voldemort within himself. That's the way an internal conflict is manifesting itself externally. He's worried that there's a part of him that is as dark as Voldemort is, and he allows that to take over for a good portion of the fifth book.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of people actually dislike the fifth book, and we are included in that tally.
It's our least favorite, more than we dislike it, per se. We can't really dislike any of the Harry Potter books, Jill. But it's true that it's often cited as the worst of the seven, and we really think that a lot of that comes from the conflict scheme that they have going, which is almost entirely internal. There isn't enough external conflict until the very end to keep it moving. A lot of the excitement is lost, because most of what we're doing through the fifth book is living through Harry's imagination, through his head and through his dreams, and that's
often just not exciting enough for people.
Yeah, I mean, for the first large chunk of that book, we're with the Order of the Phoenix just inside of the one house the entire time, which is, I mean, being at Hogwarts is more interesting because there's a lot to Hogwarts and a lot of places to go.
And while it does a really good job of portraying a lot of the problems in that book, you know, Sirius is becoming claustrophobic, he's spending all of this time in the same house, Harry is worried about all of these things that are happening inside his brain, but the thing is, those are terrible things for those people, and we don't want to experience that. We don't want to experience that entirely, and that's, I think, why people don't seem to like it. But everybody loves the sixth book, and that is because there is a lot of external conflict, and it's not so heavy all the time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of romance in there. We throw some Lavender Brown in, some Ginny. Yep. We mix it up a little bit.
Throw in some more characters on our trio.
Yeah, and it ends up being more of a fun kind of comedy with a lot of conflict mixed in, because the whole time you have this over-looming war that's about to happen, but the characters are still living in their own little world.
Yeah.
And they haven't really faced all of these problems outside of it yet. That's mostly the seventh book, the final book, and that is a war. That's entirely external conflict.
Literally a war.
That is literally a war.
And Harry trying to find the Horcruxes.
Harry's trying to find the Horcruxes. It's so much fighting and moving constantly. The plot is never slow.
Yeah.
It's unstoppable.
And you also see all of the internal conflicts of other characters, like Ron, always feeling like the sidekick effect, and how he just leaves
and
for
a
little bit.
And we don't get that a lot. We only get Ron's, like, quippy side, you know, his sassy best friend kind of mentality. And it's nice to see that other side of him.
Yeah.
Because it makes sense, and we all know that if we were in that position, we'd be feeling that way, too. And he comes back, and he makes amends, and it's got all of these different elements that just help make it this wonderful, wonderful book that we love desperately, even though we are very disappointed at the deaths of some characters. We won't mention them in case you are still hearing this, despite our spoiler alert, and you haven't read them. You should. They're so wonderful. Yeah. We love them. But yeah, that's the way the plot really explodes at the end of the book, and it really, the entire series comes to this big dramatic halt at the end.
Yeah,
it wraps itself up really well. We love the Harry Potter series, and we were really excited to be here today and talk to you all about it.
So I have a question to ask you guys.
Sure. Oh, hit us.
So book versus movie. Books versus movies.
Oh, I have
what
a very
you...
strong
opinion. All right, Rebecca, you go for it.
I like the books very, very much. I like them more than the movies, and here's why. So one of the best parts of the books is getting to see the inside of how Hogwarts works, the inside of the wizarding world, this whole other world that we have never experienced and probably will never experience at this point. But
well, and, you know, I'd be kind of scared to ride on a broomstick, although, you know, might be kind of fun at the theme park. Rebecca and Jill, thank you so much for coming on and sharing internal and external conflict with us today. That was very helpful.
Okay, aren't they cool?
That's fun.
I learned so much, and I've, like, read the books twice, and I was still
hilarious.
Learning stuff. Yeah. I want to thank everyone for joining us here today on Voices in the Valley. We hope that you have enjoyed the personal narrative by Emma, the band, Mr. West, and also now the analysis of Harry Potter with Rebecca and Jill. And please, 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 if you have $10, $15, $25, hey, we take $1,000! Somebody out there's got that money. Consider supporting student storytelling here in the St. Croix Valley and nurturing and empowering our youth to have a voice and to make a difference. Because I'm going to just say one thing. Our world really isn't a great place right now, and what's going to make a difference is if we empower our youth to tell a narrative and to create a new story that we can all live by.
Absolutely.
One that is more inclusive, more caring, more empathetic, and one that includes everyone. Open up your pocketbooks, go to theshireonline.com, click on that Give Minnesota, and especially on November 16th, they will have all kinds of incentives where we could earn a golden ticket for like $500. There's all kinds of games that we're playing. And one thing that we're also going to try to do is get somebody from every state to donate $10 or to look at the Boom site and read it or listen to the podcast, Hush, or do something to just empower these kids and encourage them in what they're doing. Go on to visionaroundland.com. Thanks, Dina.
Bye.
Bye. This is Steph from Voices in the Valley signing up. Until
see ya
next week. Goodbye.